Yes, open goal in the Granite City with Aberdeen's favourite loon. Big rusty draws, Russell Anderson. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No problem.
I need to make a confession to you. You're only my second favourite Aberdeen player of all time.
After?
Duncan Shearer.
Duncan
but
Shearer,
he's not allowed to come at the house when anything over 10 degrees because he gets sunstroke, so.
Today's not a good day for Dunk. The last month hasn't been a good day
for Dunk. So. Sitting red raw on his house, isn't he? I must say as well, mate, you've got lovely cheekbones. Can I just say that before we start?
Quite high, aren't they?
They are quite high. Quite yeah. Scandinavian, I'm getting quite excited. Right, on to the career, big boy.
Yes.
Grew up an Aberdeen fan?
Yeah.
And what, they just pick you up playing boys club?
But standards. Nothing really out of the ordinary. Playing for the school, playing for the boys club. Got asked to go in and train with them once a week. When I was about 14, or maybe just more earlier than that, signed the S form, stayed with him for a couple of years until I got offered a contract when I left school at 16. So, yeah.
Was that always what you wanted to do, be a footballer?
I think so. I think at the time you don't really think overly about it. You just like playing football and then you get an opportunity to go and train with the club, so you think this is great. And then the older you get, I suppose you do think, well, maybe there is a chance here for me to go and do it. And then when you get the opportunity, then why wouldn't you? Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, always something I wanted to do. And to be honest, I think Aberdeen were the only team that were interested in
it.
So, I think so. There was a couple others sniffing about, but I wasn't one of these lucky ones who had four or five clubs looking for take you down to different places and stuff. So it was really Aberdeen for me.
But were you always earmarked as the guy at Aberdeen that they thought would go and do it?
I don't think so, and I can see that now because I know there's the way that the academy system works now. They'll get them in really young, and there's some players that they'll earmark early doors that they think they've got a really good chance. I don't think I was in that category, to be honest. Late developer, maybe, I don't know.
Someone always asks defenders and centre-halves, did you always want to be a centre-half? No way.
Well, no, because I started off as a midfielder, signed as a midfielder, but there was the first season we were actually playing. Had a few injuries. To be honest, I was struggling to get into the team ahead of a few other players. There was one game the manager said, it was Neil Cooper at the time, we're going to play you centre-half and see how you do. And I did okay, which then, you know what football's like. You then find yourself playing there more regularly. And that's where it came from. So I didn't start out as a defender. Kind of ended up there by default.
You said Neil Cooper there. How good was an education with that? Guys like him coaching you as a kid?
Yeah, he was very good. There was a couple of them at the time. That's how it was weird back then. It was different. At the time, you didn't have the academy system. So you had the likes of Drew Jarvie, who was assistant manager of the first team, taking us on a Tuesday night, which just, to my knowledge, doesn't really happen anymore because they've got that many academy teams that they kind of get around to see all of them. So we had a good ground in there in terms of the coaching you got. Neil Cooper was one of them. Yeah, it was good coaching that you got, yeah.
Would these guys treat you like men, even at that young age?
Aye. In other words, aye, you got the hairdryer now and again if you needed it. But it was part of growing up, I suppose.
Do you think that's missing for the game now?
To an extent, yeah.
Would you like to see it go back to the way it was, as you say, with less coaches and maybe?
No, not back to the way, I wouldn't say, because I think a lot of it, because I've played under managers that do both sides of it, and I think there's a place for it, but I think do it all the time and it loses its impact. But I think now and again, I think boys have to realise that it doesn't come easily to them. And I think that's probably systematic of life today, actually. It does seem to be coming off a lot easier to kids these days. I know my two are guilty of that, and I know plenty of others that are.
Oh, my two are the arseholes, mate. So you signed at 16. When did you start to think, I've got a wee chance here, I'm starting to do quite well?
It was strange because initially, like I said, probably struggled a little bit. Then I got an opportunity to play at the back. There was the reserve game one evening against Falkirk in the good old days when you did have reserve football. He played a young team that night. Tommy Craig was down. I remember him, really young team, but we actually did okay. I think we lost the game 1-0, but there was enough there, I think, to show them that some of us deserved maybe more of an opportunity in the reserves and started to play more games. And after that, it happened pretty quickly. So the initial bit was actually a bit of a slow burner, but once I got into the reserves, got more involved with that, and then you started to train with the first team more regularly and then got involved with the first team squad match days and stuff. So it was, I don't think I was earmarked right from the outset in that.
Now, looking at the Bugle, it's had a few bashes, isn't it?
Quite a few.
Some of the big strikers that you played in the reserves, who were some of the boys that gave you a tough time?
In trying to think.
Or even in first team.
I remember one of them. I really do remember Rangers at home. It was a Saturday afternoon, so the first team were down at Ibrox. So the manager took a fairly big squad down there, as you would expect. We played Rangers at Pittodrie. Myself, I think Dennis Wyness. There was a few other younger ones. We had a very young team that day, and they had about 9 or 10 internationalists playing for the reserve team. Wow. That was back in the day when Eric Bo Anderson and all that were playing. So you're looking at the team lines thinking, wow, this could be an interesting afternoon. That was probably the one game that you recall that you were really tested at that level, which doesn't happen now because they haven't got big enough squads, to be honest. So I think we lost 2-1 that day. But gave a good enough account of ourselves, and it did give you a little taste for wanting to do more and get more of a competition against those kind of players.
Leading up to your debut, were you aware that you would be making your debut? Was it just totally flung in?
The day of the game, Stuart McKimmy had been playing. I'd been in and about the squad for a few games, but just on the bench. So picking up the win bonus here, thinking, didn't realise at the time that you actually got a win bonus for sitting on the bench. I think it's changed days now. You maybe don't get that so often. And the day of the game, I went in there thinking that the team had been doing okay. So I thought, well, I'll probably, if I'm lucky, be on the bench again. Manager pulled me in about 1:30 to say that Stuart had failed a fitness test and he was going to throw me in. So I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. I shit the bed.
Did you?
I briefly. And then I thought, well, you've got to get your head around this. And you were looking forward to it because you've been waiting for it, but not expecting it. And the next little bit, you just go back into your routine of trying to prepare for the game like you would for any other one, obviously knowing it's probably the biggest game you've played so far.
And was there advice given to you before your debut, or was it just go on and get on with it?
Probably just, you were getting advice all the time to an extent. So in terms of that, it was the usual. You would probably find yourself saying to young boys now, just take it like any other game and do what you've been doing, those kind of things. Mm. So. Nothing specific.
Was it a tough time for Aberdeen when you made your debut? Was that a good thing or a bad thing? Obviously, it gave you your chance, but was it hard playing in a struggling team?
Character building, I think you would call it. That first game, I actually sold the jerseys for the first goal.
Did you?
Made an arse at one of the clearances, and they went and scored from it. So you're coming off the pitch thinking, oh, Christ, that could have gone better. But at the time, yeah, it was not long after they'd won the League Cup against Dundee in 95. It was a couple of years after that. Roy Aitken had initially done really well as a manager, then found it a little bit more difficult. I think at that time, you're just trying to concentrate on your own game. It sounds selfish, but as a young boy just got into the team, you're just trying to think of actually how you can contribute to it. And obviously, you want the team to do well. But I think you are very early doors just trying to focus, making sure that you're doing all right and deserving of your place in the team.
You say you made that mistake. Would the older boys go through you after the game?
No, they didn't. I think the more you're probably in that, then you probably would get it, but not at the time, no. They probably felt like doing it, but no, they were fine.
Is that the good thing about being in a struggling team, though? If you'd made a mistake at maybe a bigger club, that'd be your chance away. But was it good that you...
Possibly. I mean, the rest of the game, I actually played okay, but as a defender, all it takes is one mistake and you can... obviously lose a goal. The fact that Stuart was injured for a little bit longer than that, I think if he'd been fit the following game, it's only natural to assume that he would have come back into the team. He was captain at the time. So from that point of view, I was lucky enough that there wasn't anyone really as a direct replacement for him other than myself. So, would I have stayed in the team if he'd become fit again? Probably not.
What was it about that Alex Miller's time? Why do you think he struggled? Come on, tell us.
Tactically, I think it was funny because I remember playing Celtic game and he was really into it tactically. And that's probably the one thing I've learned since I've started to get involved with Fermartin, that it's the training and that in managing players, I think, is the tactical side of it takes a bit of getting used to. And I think you can always actually improve that side of it. And I think he did try to outthink opponents at times. And there was a couple of times it just didn't work, to be honest. I think there was one game against St Johnstone, we played a 4-2-2-2-2. Is that 10 or 12 outfield? I can't think. And we had no width in the team, and it didn't work. And I could see on paper why he was wanting to do it, but in the cold light of day, it just didn't work. I don't think the fans ever really bought into him either, to be honest. He wasn't one of these managers that straight away grabbed the attention, the imagination of the the punters. I don't know who would, to be honest. I think Mark McGee did when I wasn't here, but so it shows it can work one or two ways, to be fair. But a few different reasons. I mean, he made good signings at the time. He signed Craig Hignett, and Higgy started off on fire for us. Really good player. And a couple of other ones, Ian Jess was back at that point. You know, it's air conditioning coming on.
There you go, mate. You can take that jacket.
No chance. so we did have the makings of a good team, but we just couldn't put it all together.
Uh-huh. Was he a ball and shooter?
He was a bit, but I've had worse.
Uh-huh. So Paul Hegarty came in, yes. Kept the club up, yeah. Done a great job. Do you think he should have got the job full time?
I think he probably should have, yeah.
Why do you think he never?
Part of me thinks it was down to the result of the last game of the season against Hearts at home. We'd actually been doing well enough, and nothing had been confirmed, but the rumour was that he was going to get the opportunity to stay on an extended stay at the club. And we lost the last game at Hearts at home 5-2, which I don't know if that had any influence on the outcome of it, but it seemed to be that the general feeling was up until the end of the season, it looked as if Heggie was going to be in for next season, and then the decision was made to go and get somebody else. So you can only surmise that maybe that any lingering doubt was maybe reinforced by that bad result of the last game of the season.
What did he do that made things better?
Probably simplified things in terms of, I'm talking about the tactical side of it before. Yeah. Just went back to basics, to be honest, which is what I think you probably do need when you're going through a tough spell. Worked on the boys' fitness, went for experience, a settled team, and the results, you know what it's like if you get one result and the confidence starts to return, second result, and before you know it, you're looking like a different team, although you know there are still areas that need to be improved, which, like I say, end of the season, that last game kind of demonstrated that the team still needed work, but Heggie did a good job, actually.
He was a great player, Paul Hegarty, wasn't he?
He was.
Was he good for young guys like you coming through?
He was. It's really enthusiastic, infectious, really good. Because I worked with Heggie at Scotland under 17s or something, just briefly. So I had a taste of what his coaching and his management skills were like. And for that time there, I thought he was good.
So what was your thoughts when you heard that big Evy Skoldal was getting the job?
Who? To be honest, I didn't really know anything about him. Nobody did. I remember getting a phone call from a couple of journalists when I was on holiday saying, oh, you've appointed a new manager, some Danish boy, Ebb Skovdal. And you're like, well, I don't know anything about him. It was a lot more difficult back then to get, it's so easy to get information these days about anybody. But back then, you absolutely nothing about him. So you didn't know what to think, to be fair.
But good experience with Bromby and teams like that?
Well, the CV kind of said that you'd done well at Bromby, yeah. Uh-huh. Been successful enough. But other than that, seen other people's CVs before and it's not something you should really go on, to be fair.
And so what were your first impressions of when you came in?
Different.
What would you do?
I think initially the language barrier is, English was fine, but it wasn't obviously as natural language, so he found it a little bit more difficult, I think, to try and explain what he wanted boys to do in the training pitch. I can only imagine me going over to Denmark and trying to speak Danish to people. Just, it's going to be more difficult. His training was, parts of it I liked, other parts I didn't.
What parts did you not like? Smoking.
Happened all the time. It's just certain routines and drills, and you know what it's like. Some of the bits and pieces you think, oh, I'm not sure, actually, I don't think this is doing us any good, to be fair. But like anything, you just get your head down and you get on with it, and you don't question them. Other bits I actually did like. There was bits and pieces that I've actually used a couple of times for Martin. So uh-huh. Yeah.
And would he pull you in and tell you were part of his plans, or was he that sort of manager?
Did he? I think he did. Because it was... He made a huge amount of changes over that time. There was literally busloads of boys coming in on trial because he was obviously trying to mix it up, shake it up a little bit. And he wasn't obviously really knowledgeable at the Scottish market, so he was looking further afield for that, which made Monday mornings interesting when you came into the changing room and there was someone else sitting at your peg and you're thinking, oh, here we go, more trialists in. And some of them actually turned out to be okay, but there was plenty that came and went.
Does that worry you as a player when you see that happening?
it's just part of the game, isn't it? You just, you know, there were quite a few that were moved on. And it was, like I say, there was quite a high turnover of players at that point.
Because you finished bottom of the league, didn't you?
No, I just dodged it because Falkirk Stadium wasn't good enough and finished bottom and made two cup finals. It was, it wasn't a great season. As much as we got to two cup finals, it wasn't a great season.
See, when things are going bad like that with the foreign manager, do the boys speak to him about like things that they think can improve or things that aren't right?
I think they tried. Whitey was manager, sorry, manager, captain at that
like
point.
Derek White.
White, yeah. Uh-huh. And Jim Leighton was there as well. And I think they did try and speak to him, along with a couple of other more experienced players. But to be honest, he was very single-minded and I think he felt his way was the right way. So I'll put it in the box and just leave it for later.
was he a bit unorthodox off the pitch as well? As you said, the smoking and
yeah.
Any stories that stand out?
There was a table in the changing room that was just there for put kit on and anything. And he started, the more he got comfortable speaking English, he would try and pick up sayings from anyone who he was speaking to. And they started to kind of creep into his team talks now and again. So, but he wouldn't get the sayings right. So the team talks, that was one thing that I didn't particularly like, would last about an hour and a half on a Saturday before. So you had players actually falling asleep, not feeling energised about going out to the game and enthusiastic about it. He started using these expressions that he picked up from other people but didn't say them right. So I think there was one Monday morning, there was, like I say, a table in the changing room, and somebody wrote one of the expressions on the table. And it was stupid. You would probably have to be there to find it funny. But then the more the expressions came every week or every training session, boys would add it to the table. So by the end of the season, we had a full table of these expressions that only we knew what meant. He thought he knew what they meant, but they didn't. Mm-hmm. And there was one day he was walking through the changing room, and we stopped and he looked at it and started reading them all, and the penny dropped that the boys were taking the piss out of
him. Was he raging?
He wasn't too bad, to be honest. He was all right. I think he had a reasonable sense of humour, but he was interesting.
Uh-huh. Did you expect him to lose his job when you finished bottom league?
Funnily enough, no, because it was almost as if they saw it as a bigger project and he was making steps towards whatever the ultimate goal was of making the club great again. Do you know what I mean? So as much as that sounds weird, any other manager probably would have been sacked. Never ever felt that he was under threat, to be honest. It was strange.
Do you think he should have been sacked then?
Probably. Mm-hmm. Probably. When you look at other managers who have been sacked for less at Aberdeen. Mm-hmm. But and I don't know, a lot of it comes down to timing, perceptions at the time of certain managers and stuff like that. I don't know if they felt that, I mean, in fairness to the board, they backed him totally. It is very easy, I think, sometimes to sack managers when they've had a few bad results. So they certainly couldn't be criticised for being trigger happy and getting rid of him. They gave him the benefit of the doubt.
Mm-hmm. That time there was a few young players coming through, yourself, McNaughton, Mackey, Essen. Good time to be coming through with your pals?
Yes, they were all a couple of years younger than me. But funnily enough, I was playing a game Friday night, a charity one, and Kevin McNaughton was playing in it. He's still fit as ever. Mm-hmm. He's the only boy I've seen that can go out on a Saturday night. No, it was a Tuesday night. And then do the bleep test the next day and just run riot with it. He's a fit boy.
After being steaming the night before, huh?
And proper steaming as well.
Brilliant.
So he's a good lad. But it was a good time to come through. There was a lot that you knew from going through the youth team. They had a successful youth team, actually. There was must have been about seven or eight of them that came through. I think, did they win the cup? Which Aberdeen haven't done, I think, since. Mm-hmm. So although I was there or thereabouts the same time, like I say, most of them were a couple of years younger than me. The only one that came through the same time as me, it was my age, was Darren Young.
Darren Young,
yeah. So myself and Daz came through the same youth team together. His brother Derek, Chris Clark, Michael Hart, Kevin McNaughton, Ryan Essen. There's quite a few of them that came through from that younger team, and they had a good youth team, and it was good to have them in the changing room and actually be part of the team.
Would you all go out in Aberdeen on Saturday
yeah.
nights and stuff like that?
Huh? An occasional Tuesday.
Do you ever wear Jim Leighton's Vaseline on your eyebrows now?
No, that's never started. No.
How good was he, Jim Leighton? Brilliant, huh?
Yes. It was funny because I think Jim was about 40 when he came back. Mm-hmm. And that was one of the things that when, I call him the Scove, but Eb Scovedale, who did pre-season, he made no allowances for Jim's age or his position. So Jim had to do the same running as everyone else did. So we're doing these 3-minute runs. You'd have 3 minutes to run, 3-minute recovery. Jim would take 6 minutes to do the run. So by the time he got back, we were ready to go again. So Jim just kept running for the full whack. And he spoke to the manager about it and said, well, but he didn't give him any leeway at all. It was, and that was my point about him being very single-minded. Once he decided, thought somebody was doing that, was it. But no, Jim was really good at uh-huh. the time.
One guy I wanted to ask you about was a madman, Dean Windass. What was he like to play on?
Dino was, probably that is the best way to describe him. He was good to have in the changing room. He was lively, shall we say.
What sort of stuff would he do?
Good player. Some of it was, you just think, me Dino. You think, oh, just give us a yard kind of thing. Uh-huh. But he was just loud. Uh-huh. I think it was probably the best way to do it. He was a good player, and he started off really well for us, but the longer he was there, I think, for whatever reason, different managers and stuff. I remember the game that Roy Aitken lost to United 5-0. Dino got sent off, and then he got sent off again for throwing the corner flag into the crowd, and I almost got the impression he was playing up to the punters as much as anything.
Was he quite like that, huh?
Yeah. And that was Roy Aitken's last. Now, that wasn't the reason. The team had been struggling anyway, to be honest. But that was the straw that broke the camel's back. That was the last game that Roy was in charge. I actually got sacked after that. But for his time that he was here, he was a bit of a cult hero, to be honest. Punters loved him. Mm-hmm. And he was a good player.
How would the foreign boys find guys like him and maybe Kev McNaughton, who was a bit wild?
A bit unusual. Although saying that, I've played with a few foreign boys at like a night out as well. So I think this perception that Scottish boys just love a night out and they're unprofessional and everyone else is very professional. I think everybody these days is more professional than they used to be. But I certainly remember back in the day there were a few boys from overseas that knew how to have a night out. And
would Big Ebby Skodal go?
No.
Nah, never. Nah.
Not right. Us anyway.
2001-2002, finished fourth. Yeah. How good was that year for both the team? And I think you had a great season yourself, didn't you?
That was the season I was just coming back from my cruciate, I think. I did my knee in the Scottish Cup final 2000, and it took me a while to get back from it. So, yeah, just getting back into the team at that point, it was obviously much better than what they'd been used to for a couple of seasons. And you know what it's like. If you're playing a team that's winning more times than losing, it's a hell of a lot more enjoyable than being bottom of the league. So, it was good. I think the players enjoyed it, but it was more of a, I would say, I think the foreign players that did play became more used to the league and the team and the city. I think it does take time for people to settle in if they've moved from overseas. And some of the local boys as well had a big influence on their results as well. So it actually moulded them a reasonable team.
Who was the top men in that? Who'd have been the top men in that team, aren't you?
2001, geez, you're testing my memory now. Robbie Winters would have been there. Like I say, Whitey was there. Kevin McNaughton. Was that when Isham was there? Isham was a great player.
Was he?
Box of tricks. You didn't see it that often, but I remember his debut against St Mirren at Love Street, Scottish Cup third round. And I can't remember who he was playing against, but honestly, he told him a new one. It was, and you think, Jesus, we've got somebody here, what a player. I don't know where they actually managed to find him. Because like I say, it was one of these that an overseas player, foreign agent, I don't know. So I don't know where he'd come from, but he had great natural ability.
He had a bit of ability.
Yeah, definitely.
You mentioned Derek White there. How good was he? Obviously, the centre-half, captain of the club, helped you a lot.
He was good. To me, for all the young boys, actually, because for a while it was quite a young changing room, so he took it upon himself to kind of be the father figure, I suppose, and he liked a night out as well. He knew how to enjoy himself, but he also knew when to work hard, and he was good character. He was an important player figure in the changing room at the club at that time. Yeah, I think that a lot of the young boys looked up to him, including myself.
What sort of stuff would he just pull you aside and tell you things you were doing wrong and things you were doing...
That, but he would also take the piss out of you in a nice way as well, which is standard banter in the changing room, to be honest. But yeah, he knew the time to actually pull you aside and have a word with you, or actually go through you if you felt that you needed it. Just picking the right signs, the right times to actually do what's necessary.
One thing I need to ask you about is the Steve Patterson era. Somebody told me it was after he watched you boys in training, he drove him to drink. Is that true?
I think he was already there, to be fair.
Did you know that straight away?
No. Although I kind of knew him beforehand. My brother-in-law, my father-in-law, I should say, was assistant manager to Steve at Huntley for a few years. So they knew him really well. I didn't know him so well, but I met him a couple of times when I'd been with my wife or my father-in-law. He's honestly so much time for him. He's a really nice boy. Didn't realise at the time he liked a drink. Still didn't really, overly, because he did, I suppose, he didn't flaunt it initially when he came to the club. I'm sure people that knew him well knew that he liked a drink, but I didn't really know him that well. And then obviously the infamous night that he went out the Friday before the game and the Saturday, missed the game, and then obviously everything came out off the back of that, which was a shame to see, actually, because I felt sorry for him. Front up, in front of the cameras on the Monday after that, I think it was Dundee they played. I felt really sorry for him, actually.
Was he a good manager?
I think he was. I'm just not sure if he realised how big a job it was at Aberdeen, because the scrutiny's here, definitely. There's obviously bigger jobs in Aberdeen, and there'll be plenty of people that would argue, and I'm not going to argue with them, but in terms of coming from Inverness and prior to that Huntley to then coming to Aberdeen, I don't think he realised how much bigger a club it was.
Mm-hmm. It's a shame for him, isn't it?
Yeah.
Did you speak to him when he left?
No, because we didn't know it was actually happening. We went away on holiday, season finished. I remember just before the end of the season, actually, Duncan Shearer pulled me aside and said, look, things have got to be better next season. I'm like, well, I completely agree. We've all got to take a bit more responsibility and make sure that we have a better season. So I think they knew themselves that things had to be better. So we went away on holiday thinking, well, yeah, let's prepare, go away, rest up. We'll come back next season and we'll see what we can do. And then a few days later, you just heard the news again. One of the journalists said that the manager's been sacked. Willie Muller's come in, director of football, and he's obviously decided to go down a different route, and he appointed Jimmy Calderwood.
Do you have a good relationship with Willie Muller?
It was okay. I didn't really have that much to do with him, to be fair.
Would he never ask the players what they thought or stuff?
Occasionally, but you didn't see him. I think that was one of the things that he was actually good at, because he'd obviously appointed Jimmy Calderwood. I'm not sure if this was intentional or if he just the way that he worked. I don't think he felt he wanted to be intruding on the manager and stepping on his toes. So he was very much let Jimmy get on with it. And Jimmy did really well initially, yeah.
Uh-huh. Big character.
Aye. He kept hearing stories because he'd been in a couple of days before everyone came back. And you know what, like some of the players will come in beforehand, maybe the day before, to make sure everything's sorted there. Kid themselves on, they'll go into the gym and do a run and stuff. And you'd heard, you should see the colour of the new gaffer. He's been on holiday for 6 weeks to,
Magaluf, is it? He's got a pub behind.
Yeah, Santa Ponza, I think. Yeah. And then we're all sitting in the changing room that first Monday, and then the door like booms open and then he walks. You're thinking, wow, what a colour, unbelievable.
What was his first words to you, as you remember now?
I can't remember, but he was very positive and that's just the way he was. He wasn't a shrinking violet anyway. He was a big character.
He was a leather man, wasn't he? You can make a suitcase out of him. How much a relief, though, when somebody so... After the Patterson and the Skodal thing, how much a relief when a guy like Jimmy Calderwood walks in the door?
Well, you've had that many managers. I don't know, maybe I was guilty for some of them. Over such a short period of time, you just want a little bit of stability, to be honest. And again, hadn't worked under Jimmy at all, so really didn't know. Look at his CV and you think, well, he's done a good job at Dunfermline. Everyone spoke about the attacking football that he employed. Loved his 2-4-4 or whatever it was. And so you're thinking, well, it's got the makings of being a good manager, but until you actually start working with him again, you just, you don't know. But no, initial thoughts were really good. Mm-hmm. Good first pre-season, and we had a difficult start too. I think we had Rangers at home, which is probably reminiscent of this one other way around, the first game of this coming season, Rangers new manager Aberdeen at Pittodrie. And you think, well, that's actually a tough spell, because the season before we'd finished 11th. You're thinking, right, how much better can we do with a new manager? He signed a couple of players, Baznik, Seve, Steve Lovell, Jamie Smith. So
good players.
Good players, but he also had some good players already there. And he was just trying to get more out of them. I think we went unbeaten first five or six games, to be honest. We drew with Rangers first game, I think, was it 0-0? Went away to Dunfermline, won 1-0. I think we went about four or five games without conceding a goal. And it set the, I suppose, set the scene for what was a much better season.
How big was he on Team Spinnet?
Very big, very good. He did this thing, funnily enough, we were speaking about it the other night, pre-season, he would give everyone a list of the fixtures when we were away to Holland, because everyone knew that he loved taking us back there. Mm-hmm. He did it with Dunfermline. So he would go through the fixtures and he said, right, for every game that we've got this season, I want you to put your points, what you think you'll get out of each game, and see where we're finishing the season. So everyone's looking at them, you're thinking, in the cold light of day, you look at every game, you think, well, that could be winnable. But at the back of your mind, you're thinking, well, they're not that good. We're not going to win every single game, because that's standard, isn't football. I think Michael Hart had this coming out with 106 points and won the league by about March. I was like, well, you look at it and you think, I could see his thinking behind it. You go into every game thinking you could win, but it was a good way, I think, of making the boys realise, actually, we could do all right this season. It's just trying to change the mindset of the players to think more positively. You should be looking to win every game that you go into. And I think it kind of summed up most of his time at the club.
Would that be his mentality? Even Celtic and Rangers would be going to win this game?
To an extent, yeah. I mean, he wouldn't go gung-ho straight away, but there were certainly games where you're thinking we're up against it. Right, we've got nothing to lose now, so we might as well just actually have a go at it and see. And he did that a couple of times, and it worked. Other times it didn't. I remember we played Rangers away, second in the league. If we'd beaten them, we'd gone top. And so all the papers, you know, the build-up to it, the usual rubbish. And I think they were 2-0. That's what it was. They were 2-0 up. And was it Jamie Langfield was in goals? Now, for some reason, like, Jamie had been injured in the game. So he was fit enough to play, but not fit enough to kick. So we were taking goal kicks for him. Just kicking it right down the middle of the pitch. Big Marvin Andrews was coming to head it right back down the middle, as he does. Mm-hmm. But by the time whoever was taking the goal kick was getting out, they didn't get out in time. So the centre forward was actually standing basically edge of the box. And we ended up getting pumped 5-0. And at 2-0, he said, right, okay, we're going for it, 2-4-4. And you probably would have thought at that point, well, we just kind of batten down the hatches and take it on the chin and lose 2-0. But he's like, nah, we're going for it. So rather than losing 2-0, you would rather have gone for it. And we ended up getting an arseless felt 5-0. So.
Was that frustrating for you as a centre half?
It was slightly that day, yeah. Uh-huh. But that was the way he managed it. You can't really have a go, can you?
You talked about Holland in that pre-season. Would you just have a night out together? Would he come out?
Yeah, that was the standard trip that you would have up. Was it maybe 10 days you were away? I can't remember. And it was hard 9 or 10 days. And the last day, the last night actually, you would drive back to Amsterdam and get a night out in Amsterdam before you flew back in the morning. So it was, everyone would go out together, and you know what, like, they would probably go off in their own separate way. But initially, yeah, we weren't out together. Yeah.
Do you like that? Do you like that sort of stuff, the manager coming out with the boys? Uh-huh.
I think to an extent, I think you've got to draw the line at some point, definitely. But I think now and again, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Uh-huh. How good was Jimmy Nicol to balance off Jimmy Calder? Good coach?
Yeah, really liked him. He was so enthusiastic about football. And really good knowledge of the game. They worked really well together, actually. A lot of time for Jimmy. I saw it was a couple of seasons ago when They just qualified for the Euros because he was helping Michael O'Neill. Was he assistant manager? I can't remember what his title was. And I remember him saying, I can't believe in my last 12 months I've gone from driving the bus at Cowdenbeath for the young boys to going to the Euros. That was just Jimmy. He just loved football. Didn't really care who he was coaching, what level. He just loved his football. Still does.
Could Big Calderwood, could he go for it? Like, go for somebody?
Aye.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever get on the receiving end?
Once or twice, yeah. Not a lot, but yeah.
Uh-huh. And was he scary now?
Nah.
Too lovable?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Under Jimmy Calderwood, you got your Kirin Cup.
Yeah.
You won the Kirin Cup. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you, what did you get from winning it? Was it a medal or HMV vouchers?
No HMV. They got HMV in Tokyo. I don't know. did we get a medal? I think we did. It's a good trip, that, actually. There was a... I don't think any of the Old Firm players went because they had the cup final, right. So they all pulled out. So it was basically a B team that went. We played Bulgaria and Japan, and we pumped Bulgaria 5-1. Boydie scored. Did he score a hat trick? Definitely scored. And then we played Japan the second game. We drew 0-0. So it was after the World Cup. So the stadiums were great. It was a good trip, actually. Got a night out at the end of it in Tokyo, which was decent enough as well. So
Who was the characters in that team, can you remember?
I'm trying to think, because it was a strange squad, because a lot of the, you would call the regulars, weren't in it. None of the Old Firm players were there, because obviously they had the cup final to focus on. I'm trying to think who
was it. Walter Smith, the manager?
Yeah, and Archie Knox helped him out that trip.
How did you find they two?
Really liked Walter. I hadn't come across him before. Obviously, he took the Scotland job after Bertie Vogts. But he, again, like I was speaking about going back to basics for a team that was struggling, he basically did that and rebuilt the confidence of the players. And it was like night and day from the time that he went in until the end of that campaign. The team was actually unrecognisable in terms of the way it was playing and the confidence of the players. But he did a really good job.
What did you make of that Bertie Vogts run?
Again, it was interesting. There's little bits and pieces, like on a Friday night, he would get the boys down to the suite just to try and relax them before the game on the Saturday, and there would be a couple of beers just for the boys to have a drink, and nobody really ever took it on because they just didn't feel comfortable doing it. So he tried a couple of different things that I hadn't seen before. That was probably a perfect example of it. But overall, again, really high turnover of players. The amount of players that he went through trying to find a settled team, I don't think helped, to be honest. And it probably, he had his best spell when he actually found a settled team, made the playoffs, but didn't quite make it through.
Did you love playing for Scotland? Did you love when you get called up?
Yeah, uh-huh. I did. It was good, although towards the end, the last trip, actually, we're playing Czech Republic away. And I was down in England at that point, and the English league had finished a couple of weeks before the Scottish one. So we'd been asked to go up to Lesser Hamden and train for 3 or 4 days just to keep ticking over. There was four of us turned up for three training sessions. I'm thinking, this is not great. But you kind of just took it in the chin. You thought, right, we'll come back the following week when everyone met up. So then that was more normal. But there was only still about 16 players that travelled because, you know what, like the usual call-offs, end of a season, boys are carrying injuries and the clubs and the players would rather probably look after anything for the start of the following season. So we went to the Czech Republic and it's just a friendly. And at that point there, I think it was 15 of us, so there was four subs. And I never got on that day, and I thought, the other three did, and I'm thinking, I knew coming back from that trip that I thought my time was coming to an end if George Burley was the manager, which was fine and true enough. I think the following squad, I wasn't in it, and then I got injured after that, so I never got the opportunity again to find out. So.
See, just on the back of the Graham Shinney stuff, last year, no getting picked, is it frustrating when you're playing for Aberdeen and you seem to get overlooked when you maybe think you're playing really well?
I think it all depends. I mean, deep down, At the time Walter Smith was manager, he took Davy Weir back into the team. I can't remember who else played along with Davy, but Davy did really well around that time. So if you're competing with other players that are in the team and doing well, then sometimes you've just got to hold your hands up and think, well, I've just got to wait for my opportunity. And sometimes it just doesn't come. I think for the likes of Shinny, he probably has deserved a chance, to be honest, at least even to prove himself in the squad and then hopefully get a game to show what he can do. Because I think sometimes you don't truly find out what a player can do until you throw them in there. Now, not all players will actually be able to step up, but you'll never know if they can sink or swim unless you give them the chance.
Mm-hmm. Right, on leaving Aberdeen.
Yeah.
Why?
Why? because I think it was the start of the spell in Scottish football where I think people realised that the money was coming to an end. So clubs had been spending money that they couldn't afford. I was coming into the last year of my contract and I was expecting them to speak to me about extending it because I'd been there, 12 years. I was happy, thought things were going pretty well. And they basically said that due to a couple of reasons, one being finance, they would struggle to offer me another contract. So at that point they were thinking, well, what does that mean? It's like, well, we'll see if there's anyone that's really interested to take you. And they can obviously pay a transfer fee for you. And that's what happened. Mm-hmm. So there was a couple of, I think Norwich had made an offer, which was knocked back. And then I got a phone call from my agent when we were on holiday, actually, to say Sunderland made an offer that the club had accepted. And then it was obviously down to me to go and speak to them and see what they had to say.
Mate, you're a hero to me. As a fellow Valsport wearer, getting a move to an English Premiership, yes. Wearing Valsports, mate, fair play to you.
Take the piss out of me for those boots.
Oh, mate, see when it's wet, it's like wearing Timberlands with things, they're so heavy.
They were so comfortable at the time, though, honestly. We were a good company, I'm trying to think who else
Big
wore
Sutton
them.
Wore them.
Yeah, that was good enough for me. If he wore them, that's good enough for me.
But was it sad to leave Aberdeen? Obviously,
it was,
captain,
yeah.
And team you...
Aye, it was, because you've been there a long time. It's all that you know. So as much as I was excited about going, trying something else, there was part of you that, yeah, you're leaving, changing room that you really enjoyed, club, team. And the club is, there's a lot of good people at that club, and it's still the case now that you do get looked after well.
Can you remember the day you left and last time you drove away for Pittodrie?
Well, it was funny because, same again, it was during the close season, so I did have to go in and get my... But the initial, when I came back from holiday, got the train down to Sunderland. Obviously did the medical, which... that wasn't as plain sailing as probably should have been. And then once everything was signed, then you have to come back up and then you do go in and get all your boots and everything. So, but yeah, it just is what it is. You just get on with it.
Mm-hmm. And did you meet Roy Keane? Did you speak to him before you went down there? Or?
Spoke to him before I went down there on the phone.
That'd have been a cheery chat, was it?
He was fine, actually. It was a good phone call, positive. Told us about what he wanted to do. Obviously, they had a really good season. From the point that he took over, I think they were bottom of the league. Got them playing really well and had a really successful season. So they were coming up basically on a wave of enthusiasm and optimism about the following season. And it was a good team. Sorry, a good time to be at the club. Facilities were unbelievable.
Yeah, massive club.
Especially coming from Aberdeen, who didn't have a training ground or anything. You're going down there, seeing the size of the stadium, the kind of crowds they could get. It was a different level, yeah.
And was he telling you were going down there to play, starter?
No. But I think he just said that you come down there and prove yourself and you'll get an opportunity, which is all that you want to hear, to be honest. And I knew that he was signing a lot of players as well because he obviously felt that they needed to strengthen for going into the new season. So as much as I felt like I had a chance to, I didn't think I was going down there nailed on to starting up.
Yeah. And can I ask the first time you've seen him properly lose it?
I think it must have taken a little while, to be honest. And then when it did, he can lose it. But I think initially, you're just concentrated in pre-season. So it is, the first couple of weeks are always slightly different. It's the conditioning side of it for the way to speak about it. But aye, he could lose it, yeah.
Was it frustrating, obviously, the injuries that you got when you went down there?
Yeah. I was probably most of my, I think I was down in England for just short of 5 years and I played 50 games. So it was just when you thought you were maybe getting somewhere after being injured, then you would break down again, you'd have to go through the whole. I mean, there's plenty of people being in the same boat as me, so they'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
Was he fine with the injuries, or would
he? He was okay. I think at times you can get frustrated only because you've signed someone actually, and they're no use to you. So I can understand that completely. But the second time I did my cruciate, actually, he did come in and find me because I did it when I was on loan at Burnley. I came back to Sunderland and he actually came and found me in the treatment room. And he was good. So I think there are times as a manager when you can get frustrated if players keep breaking down. But overall, no, he was good.
See, when you keep breaking down like that, does it ever cross your mind just to chuck it?
Once or twice it did, yeah.
Uh-huh. What kept you going?
Probably kids and wife. Because if you don't do that, what are you going to do? And you still kind of felt that, oh, I'm too young to kind of chuck it. I've still got a few years left in me, so why not? You're still contracted. And the physios are always really positive. At Sunderland. Even at Derby when I was there, and strength and conditioning guys. So, and I think that's a big part of being someone like that, that they need to have that right mentality to try and get boys through when they can be a bit low.
Was the wee loan spell at Derby, did that get your love back for it?
Well, it was more than a loan spell. I'd come into the third year of my contract. It was just after Christmas time. Steve Bruce was the manager. I'd just got fit. I'd been out for about, I think it was another 6 months. And I'd done all the rehab, was back in training, and I was feeling good. But I kind of knew deep down that I'd been out that long that I'd struggle to get any kind of game time at Sunderland. And true enough, Steve Bruce pulled me in and said, look, you're looking fine. We've had a couple of people interested in taking you, and you're not going to play here. So I think it's probably best for you to go and play elsewhere, which I completely agreed with. Hardly played any first-team football. So I terminated my contract at Sunderland and went to Derby for a three-month contract just to the end of the season. So I went down there initially hoping just to try and get fit and get my name out there, put myself in the shop window. And Derby were struggling a bit at that point. They were up against it. They were threatened with relegation. So we stayed up that season. I played most of the games that I went down. So they offered me a two-year deal off the back of it. And at that point there, that's when we all moved down to Derby. So
after Derby, were you surprised to hear from Craigie Brown?
Not really. He phoned me the summer before I came back, actually, to ask if I was interested in going back. And at that point, we'd just moved the kids again, school, and I still felt like I had something to kind of prove down in England because I hadn't had a proper crack at it. So I politely declined and said, look, I want to give Derby one more shot. But she was fine with, because he's the nicest man in football.
Craig Brown, is he?
He is. Got injured, what was it, just before Christmas time. And it was bad enough that I was going to be out near enough for the rest of the season. So the manager at the time, Nigel Clough, phoned and said, look, when the board find out that you're probably not going to be able to play again this season, they're going to try and come to some kind of agreement with you. True enough, I got a phone call about half an hour later. So he was just prepping me for it and just saying, look, can we come to some sort of arrangement? So at that point there, I'm thinking, well, if I terminate my contract, where am I going? What am I doing? Because I was not long after having an operation, so I needed the rehab. So I phoned Aberdeen, the physio there, Sharpie, who's probably spent more time with him over the years than I have with my wife. Because I knew if I could get fit, he was probably my best chance of doing it. And also, eldest one was just coming into secondary school, and I thought, well, we've been moving him about a little while now. I think we'll just go back up to Aberdeen and we'll settle them into school again. Sharpie said yes, he would look after me, try and rehab me. But just as a favour, at that point, I wasn't getting offered a contract or anything. And then I spoke to Craig Brown, and he said, well, absolutely. If if Sharpie's fine with it, then yeah, you can use the facilities. Sharpie can try and get you fit, and then basically we'll see what happens off the back of it. So Sharpie was good enough, good to his word. He got me fit, and I got a contract off the back of it.
Brilliant. See how you say Craig Brown, everyone, he's obviously a great manager, but what is it that he does it so good? Because I can't imagine him being on the training ground and taking training,
well,
does he?
Towards the end, it wasn't him that was taking training. I think it was Archie that took everything. And I remember Craig saying that. That was the when Aberdeen came calling for them and he was at Motherwell. I think they were obviously on a good thing there. They were doing well enough. And I think Archie maybe needed a little bit more convincing about coming back up here because they were doing so well at Motherwell. And I think that was one of the things that he said, well, I want to take training as Archie did. So Archie did near enough all the training. Craig would take it occasionally. But like I say, it was really Archie that did the training.
What is he so good at then, Craig Brown?
His man management was good. I think some people would think, because, like I say, he's a nice man, but you shouldn't really mistake that niceness for softness, you know what I mean? He's got an edge to him that he needed to make. You're not going to be in football that long without being able to make decisions and have an edge. So he knew right decisions to make, and if he had to make difficult decisions, he didn't have any issue with that at all. But no, he just treated people really well.
Sad that it never worked out for him really at Aberdeen.
Yeah, I think he... Oh Christ, when he took over from them, they were in a hell of a position. For me, looking at the outside looking in, they would have got relegated that season. And he stabilised them, got them away quite comfortably from relegation by the end of the season. I think he probably is slightly disappointed that they didn't kick on more following seasons.
Mm-hmm. And then Derek McInnes comes in.
Aye.
How good was he for you? Get you back playing regularly?
Yeah. I think, again, there was a lot of good stuff already there, and I think he then just took on at the next level. His attention to detail. I remember him saying when he first came in, all the different areas in the club, we need to make each and every one of them better. If you do that, then you'll provide a better environment for the players to actually play better. And he did that. The training was good, professional in everything he did. And he actually signed some good players as well, which is a massive part of management, being able to pick out a player and sign him and get him gelled into the team as well. So, no, he's got a very impressive record since he's come into the club. Aye?
So you're not surprised how well he's done?
Not really, no. I think it's going to be more and more difficult with every passing season now because Rangers are back and Celtic have got resources that Aberdeen can't compete with. You've got Hibs and Hearts now back in the league. But he proved again last season, even with all those clubs in there, that he can still put out a competitive team. And each and every season he's lost one or two big players at that time. Jacko, Johnny, Niall for a bit, Kenny McLean this summer. And he's managed to replace them. But I don't think it's an easy task to do that.
Out of all the managers, who would you take the most from it, or then?
Can I sit in the fence?
After this interview, Steve Patterson.
Can I sit in the fence?
No, come on, tell us.
No. Probably, I would say Derek McInnes. I would say, aye.
Okay. The League Cup win 2014, that must have been a dream for you as an Aberdeen boy.
Yeah. Because I thought, Christ, I've been playing football 20 years and I've not won a thing. other than the Kieran Cup. So I genuinely thought, as much as I came back to Aberdeen to get fit and try and be successful, when you come back, you're just trying to concentrate on getting fit to start with. So as much as you're trying to win things, when you've been doing it that long and you haven't had a chance to get, it'd been a long time since I'd even been in a final. It was a nice kind of end to my career, I should say. And it was, everything about that game was weird because of the, obviously being at Parkhead rather than Hampden, I think it was because of the Commonwealth Games, was it? Mm-hmm. The fact that we'd sold 40 odd thousand tickets, which is unbelievable. Don't know if that'll ever happen again. So there were a lot of things about it that just made it slightly different. The came itself was shite.
Was it?
It was poor. I remember Inverness having a game that week because they'd had a fixture backlog. I think they played on the Wednesday before the game on the Sunday. I remember John Hughes mentioning that they'd had a lot of games, and he was trying to obviously psychologically put all the pressure back on us, and they didn't open up at all in the game. We lost Johnny Hayes in the first 5 minutes, and that season Johnny was a big player for us, so there wasn't much incident, to be honest. Came down to penalties, and that was probably the best bit about it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. You didn't seem me, strike me as a guy that gets nervous before games. Were you nervous before, aren't you?
Probably not any more than I had been. I was probably more nervous the semi-final.
Right.
Because I think the semi-final, you're that close to it, but you can also be that far away from it that you're... so no, I was probably more nervous the semi-final than I was the final.
Would that have been your best part of your career? Best bit of your career?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Back to Aberdeen after it?
Yes. Bus journey back up the road. By the time we got cleared up at Parkhead, we actually got a call from someone to say that the road, because there are that many people down, I think there'd been an accident or something. So it was gridlock going up normal way to Aberdeen, so we went across to Edinburgh, went up that way. Stopped at Tesco. Baz had, Barry Robson had lost the shooting competition the day before, so the usual thing was, are you taking something the following week or something? So Baz basically paid for all the booze on the bus. And if you know how tight Baz is, you'll know that he wasn't happy with that. So we got back to Aberdeen about 10:30. There was other people not getting back up there till midnight because they'd been stuck in traffic. So I had a right good bus journey back up the road. It was decent.
We sing song and yeah, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. When did you know it was time to hang up the boots?
The season, I knew that, was it that season? Yeah. I'd been playing, cartilage had been damaged a little bit that season. And there was games where I was fine, and then the following week it was filled up with fluid and it would settle down again. So you managed to get through it, it was okay, but went away for a close season, and that was the problem we had. Because we were going into the first round of the qualifying, I think we only had about 2 weeks off in the summertime, then you're straight back in. So I didn't have any time for it to settle down properly. Then went into pre-season training, and it would flare up now and again. Just when you thought it would settle down, out of nowhere, I wouldn't be able to train for a couple of sessions. So first game of the season against St Johnstone, I think I did my knee properly then. So I went in to get it tidied up. And then I was doing the rehab from that, and then it just went wrong. My knee was fine, but I kept tearing my calves, like both of them. So I had 4 calf tears in about 8 weeks. And every time you did the rehab and you think, well, this shouldn't be happening, you go out for a jog, a simple jog around the pitch, and you tear your calf again. So at that point there, I thought, right, enough's enough. My body's telling me that can't he do it anymore. So I told the manager, actually, at Christmas time, I was thinking of chucking it then, and he said, well, at least give yourself a chance to try and get fit. You never know. So he was good enough. He was really good at that point. So I spent the rest of the season just trying to get fit, to be honest. Played a couple of 20s games towards the end of the season. Played the last game of the season, but by that time I'd already made my mind up and I'd announced it that I was hanging the boots up. So I kind of knew, like I say, that spell, that 6-8 week spell when I just couldn't actually do it again. I decided that was it. Ties.
The calf tears are carrying the valve sports a bit, the heavy valve sports.
You've seen my calves as well, like pipe cleaners. I never had the best pair of calves anyway. So.
It's been brilliant, but how would you look back on your Aberdeen career?
I loved it, actually. Could have had a lot more success, I'm guessing, because we had some dark days early doors, but loved every single part of it. And especially the bit towards the end, I probably wasn't expecting it. That was probably the most enjoyable time. So no, overall, I wouldn't change it.
Brilliant. And these days, assistant manager at Fort Martin, how are you enjoying it?
Water boy.
Water boy.
Well, I haven't got any coaching badges, I told you that. Enjoying it, yeah, I wasn't expecting it. And I kind of said that before, that it wasn't really a route I was looking to go down. But when Paul got the job, he obviously asked if I wanted to come in and help him out, and I couldn't say no to him. So, but no, it's been good. A good set of boys. We were successful enough last season. We won a couple of cups. but we were still quite a way back off Cove, who finished obviously clear winners in the league. So, and so far it's been good.
Going for the league this year, sir?
Well, I think when you start the season, we'll get the team, the sheet out and see how many points we can get.
104.
150. but no, I think, I mean, Cove are going to be there at shot at. They were good last season. They've signed another couple of players again, which I think will strengthen them. So they'll be the team to beat again.
Wish you all the best, big man. Cheers. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Cheers.